Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
It's always nice to chat to someone who's been there and won the medals. BJ Botha won 25 caps for South Africa, and he was a cornerstone of that formidable pack that won the World Cup in 2007. BJ, how are you?
Good, Donna. How are you keeping?
I'm great. Look, we were speaking to Tomás Sol earlier on, but I'd really like to focus on the South Africa-Japan game for you. Just your take on the South African selection.
Yeah, I suppose the team that's been selected is the same team that played against Italy. It's the kind of the 6-2 split really on the bench, as we see. I suppose, again, showing the physicality that the South Africans want to bring to the game. And I think it's needed against a very dangerous Japanese side. I suppose they've been building some momentum. But not really been tested other than the big game against New Zealand. So I think this is probably their next kind of, I suppose, big game since New Zealand, that they know they're going to be tested in all areas of the game. So they need to, you know, bring that to the game.
What do you think South Africa will have learned from watching what happened against Ireland and Scotland, what Japan are capable of?
I suppose in one sense South Africa played Japan in a pre-World Cup game. They were there two weeks before the tournament started. They obviously then played them, in the World Cup. I suppose watching those games, it just shows, you know, the dangerous side they are. I suppose the engines they got on them, they incredibly fit side, well coached by Jamie Joseph, you know. And they've got this belief, I suppose, they show on the field through both those games. And they are a top side and going to be difficult to beat.
BJ, South Africa have learned this lesson themselves 4 years ago. They've seen Ireland, they've seen Japan. They're not going to take the bait. They're not going to try to play this high tempo game. And like you said there, to explain to people at home, a 6-2 split means that they've gone with six forwards on their bench and two backs. They're going to take them on physically, aren't they?
Exactly, and wear them down. I suppose the tight phases, you know, are going to be massive. That just takes time, and I suppose this side is, this side meaning Japan, they're incredibly effective with ball in hand, attacking, and similar on defence. But I suppose the one part that Ireland didn't really test them was in the scrum and in the maul. They couldn't get that going, and I suppose South Africa will definitely target that side, and then the physicality they bring around the ruck. So they'll know that, I suppose, from a 6-2 split, that at about the 45-50 minute mark, they'll bring on fresh legs, and the guys that are coming off the bench, the Kitsoffs, the Malcolm Marks, are guys that have started, you know, in some of the rugby championships games up front, and they know what's needed.
I mentioned to Donica earlier, BJ, that Japan's pack had been scrummaging against 10 players in training to try and simulate the power of the Springboks pack, and he told me it was a completely futile exercise. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I suppose for me, it's all in the, when the guys go live, it's the kind of tension that's built up. I suppose the nerves around that, it's about combinations. It's all in well preparing for that, but I think that's a kind of a long time coming. I suppose you need to be really reactive and to see how that happens in the game and adapting through that. And scrummaging is about confidence really within the game, building that momentum through the scrum, through the tight phases, and then adjusting to the ref and pushing that envelope as far as you can.
There's no one better to speak about scrummaging. I've been lucky enough to play with you. It's an art form that you've excelled at. What have you made of Japan scrummaging, though?
Yeah, Japan are interesting. I suppose, again, that was a big surprise how they came at the Irish scrum. And again, I think that were that one scrum, I think it's in the Irish game, it was about the 32 minute mark where, you know, they really came at Ireland at probably a big turning point in the game, and that's what it is really. It's a weapon, I suppose, that can turn a game, you know. And they are a formidable scrum. I suppose in one sense, it depends how much pressure they are put on as well and how much ascendancy they do get there. Because again, that's what I talk about adapting. I suppose once you feel the pressure in a scrum, you know, certain elements then break away, you know, your connections break away, the tension really weakens. And I suppose then the guys are looking around and what's next. I suppose that's when you're in the danger zone. So South Africa would want to push them in that direction. But I think, again, they'll be up for it. And I think we'll see a real contest in the first couple of scrums. And then we'll see, I believe, the South Africans then will take over.
You spoke about the pre-World Cup game against Japan and how South Africa will make it a set-piece battle, a confrontational, physical game. How will we judge that? How will you know that they're trying to play this game compared to Japan's open, expansive running game?
Yeah, I think we will see it definitely in the first 5 minutes of the game. I suppose we saw it in the Italian game, how the guys came out just really manhandling the guys around the ruck, you know, getting off on top of them and really making the guys get off the ground, work hard to get around the corner on defence. And I suppose we'll probably see the guys start off with a strong mauling action and if they do have a line out and going for the corner. But in the other sense, I suppose they also know it's cup rugby. The South Africans are aware of that. They've been there before. A lot of these players, you know, playing top tournaments, they've been there before. They know 1 point wins the game and puts them through to the semi-final. So it'll also be, I think, that whole battle of the error rate. They don't want to be giving away silly penalties and obviously back off the momentum that they're building through that, you know.
This is the test for Japan, though, isn't it? Everyone has seen them beat teams with the running game. Can they answer the best at a set-piece battle?
Yeah, I think this will be definitely the test. You know, I think we've seen, you know, how they've shown. They're just incredible. You know, as I said, I mentioned, I think the biggest thing that hits home for me is how fit they are. They just keep on coming at you, how they build the phases, how they know each other in their kind of backline and forward connections, and knowing where to be. But I think this is one probably if they do lack something in their game, it would be what South Africa does best, you know. And I think we'll probably see that South Africa will come with that. And it's the stats show that South Africa's territory and possession is quite low with the teams they play against, you know. And hence the fact that they're trying to just squeeze you into that position of after three or four phases, you're giving away a penalty because of the massive momentum they're driving from their physicality, the breakdown, the scrum or the lineout.
It's back-to-back massive tests as well for Japan. So just physically, I'm sure it'll be tough to kind of keep going with such a short break against such a massive team.
Yeah, I think that is true. But I think just the game itself will probably lift the guys. They'll find the energy somewhere, you know. I think that's just the adrenaline will be pumping. It'll probably be a packed stadium in Japan and everyone else will be shouting for Japan and world rugby, I suppose. And, I think everyone will be shouting and just really been obviously shouting for them as they've been progressing through the stages and just what it's been doing for Japan rugby and the Japanese people itself, I suppose. But they'll pick themselves up. But, I don't think they'll have enough there, you know, to kind of give any problems from a result perspective for the South Africans.
Just from Razzie's point of view then, going in kind of everyone shouting for Japan, will he like that kind of mindset of it's us against everyone?
Definitely. And I think they'll drive that home, you know. It'll be a nice, tight unit, you know. That's what World Cups have been about. It's been about the 43, you know, including the management, including the coaching staff, including the analysis. It's about that unit that stick together. And I suppose that's what makes it kind of quite unique going to a World Cup. And they make their little town, you know, South Africa or whatever the case may be, and they feel that support from that perspective. But I think it's keeping that, you know, really in between themselves and, you know, knowing the hard work that's been done before, I think, you know, and leading up to the World Cup is important. They know, and only they know what they've done and prepared for, and this is hopefully will bear the fruits of that.
Of course, Felix is in there as well. BJ, have you heard anything about how he's getting on in the backroom team?
Yeah, I think he's not new to the backroom team either, you know, being with Munster, with all of them, most of them anyway. I think he's just relishing the opportunity, I suppose, working with a team like South Africa and, you know, the kind of with Arlid again, back in the days when he was our SNC in Munster. So I think he's really enjoying it, I suppose. Who wouldn't, you know? And, I think it would have been very interesting that they still might meet with a South African-Irish clash. I think everyone was speaking about that. That was going to be interesting. Him having the knowledge on both sides, but I think they, you know, who knows, they might meet still yet. But I think he's just loving it.
It's amazing what Razzie has done with the South African team in such a short space of time. You spoke about the people he's put in around him, but his time in Ireland, did he learn maybe structures and things he could put in place to help South African rugby to get back to where it belongs?
Definitely. I think part of that was definitely that. I think you saw the structures. There are a few used the structures with Munster, player management, and using that, that platform. I suppose also bringing through new talent and nurturing that, and also selecting on form and not being scared to make that decision. I think the World Cup is a lot about form and kind of getting players in a place where they're going to be really right for those six or whatever weeks they might be involved in the World Cup, you know. So he's been kind of massive in that. I suppose the decisions that they've made with SA Rugby have not been easy, I suppose, and also other clubs with players that are tied in international side of things. So it's taken a lot of work to get the guys together, but I think they've been playing us for a long time, as all the teams have been. But Russie would have, I think, learned definitely part of what his time over here has played a big part.
There's always someone behind the scenes that players have a whole respect for and want to play well for. And Jaco Nienberg, his time at Munster, you just knew the Munster lads loved him. South Africa's defence has been incredible. What have you made of him? What have you made of South Africans, D?
Yeah, Jaco Nienaber.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm working on my Afrikaans names.
100%. Yeah, I know. He's really been massive. And I suppose, you know, where Russie goes, he goes. And where Jaco goes, Russie goes. I suppose they just make a massive combination. You know, Jaco's got a massive, knowledge of analysing. And he's a physio as much as he is that as well. And just a team man. And he's really passionate about that. And he brings that aggression from a defensive perspective. And that's where the South African bring their physicality and mostly make their statement, as you know, from that's where the guys and eventually anyway the big games are won. So he'll make sure that physicality and that aggression is brought about, and really their defensive system shows where how they come off the line and really forcing the guys to come inside so they can make those big impacts and really try and turn over and really cause havoc at the breakdown. And he's been, you know, as I said, as you've mentioned now, massive there. And I suppose it's just the finer things that you know. As a player at that level, I think that's what you relish, that contact. But it's again just organising that, making that system work in more seamless, and I suppose guiding them on that.
What have you made so far of South Africa's World Cup? Obviously, a disappointing loss to New Zealand at the start, but are they gathering momentum at the right time?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that, you know, New Zealand was obviously a massive game first out. I think a lot of the things that happened in that game were due to errors that we made, you know, uncharacteristic errors from South Africa, you know, missed tackles. But again, then they also had that, and we had our time in the game to go ahead. One or two I don't want to mention, but it looks like it's been a part and parcel of the World Cup so far, the refs. But look, you know, the refs reffing both the sides. And then they would have taken, obviously, little bit of a knock there. They would have definitely wanted to get over that one. They would have put them in the driving seat, which you always want to be in a World Cup. You don't want to be relying on other results, because that just sits in the back of the head there while you're preparing and trying to build that momentum, which is massive. I suppose the position they find themselves in now is, I think, probably the best position they could be in. They've got a roundabout clean bill of health. Cheslin Kolbe and a few of the other guys they were worried about have come through that now, which is massive for World Cup, having your players together, and then obviously having the guys build some momentum through Italy, and obviously not coming too unscathed through Canada and through the other side now when they prepare now for Japan.
Kolbe has been one of the standout players of the Rugby World Cup. What have you made of him? This guy is magical, isn't he?
Yeah, just incredible. You know, I think the guys who followed, he's obviously playing in Toulouse, just been massive for Toulouse, you know, and then just continuing that with the South African form within that unit and being allowed to do that. I think sometimes you get in, change teams and come into the national squad and you're restricted, but he's been allowed to do that. You know, what's really been, it's great that he's still part of the South African side, of course, most importantly, but he's also just such a great player to have at the World Cup, so it would have been a shame to see him leave. He just lights up the field and everyone likes to see him, obviously, you know, doing that. I suppose what's really been the point for me that to note is his defence, you know, really just so sound on defence and really knowing his place, where to be. Obviously, his attacking ability he is there to see for everyone, and we know that. But his defense and rounding that off, it just gives that little bit of extra edge to South Africa. You know, kind of known for their physicality and taking them out up front, and then you get this guy Cheslin running circles around the guys when they're kind of just dragging and actually going for a big hit, but he just dances around them. So I suppose just bringing that side of things as well and just mixing it up, I think, yeah, he's been huge for South Africa, and as I mentioned, now for the World Cup.
We spoke about Razzy there taking ideas from the structure within the RFU, but he's gone outside the South African playing pool with players like that and De Klerk at nine. Do you, it just from being a player within the system, playing with Ulster and Munster, do you believe that's something the Irish squad should do, or should they protect the playing pool within Ireland?
It's a difficult one, you know. I think there's definitely a balance. I think there's players that add to the team and add to the upcoming players. I think that experience is lost. I think you need to use that, you know. I think those players that are brought in, Frans Steyn, for instance, you know, World Cup winner in 2007, bringing that calmness into a squad, you know, being there, done that, you know, and especially in a bit leading up to a big tournament. However, I think it's a balance on the other side of things where they need to bring that youth through and use the international window period, whether it be the Six Nations or whatever, to decide, listen, yeah, we're going to use the guys in Ireland that have bought into our system, yeah, and then they plan forward to the World Cup or whatever competition they might be coming up. So I think it's a real fine balance. I think there's always this challenge for players leaving and then all staying. You know, you have all these kind of decisions to make from a family, from a financial, from all the stuff that a professional player you have to make. So it is very difficult, but I think it's a balance, and I think there's definitely scope for that for a player to be selected if he's playing abroad and he still wants to and believe he can still, you know, add to the national side.
I know he drove you nuts at times, but Simon Zebo.
Yeah, Simon, look, I think Simon has got something special, you know, as you say, he drove me nuts and
he drove us all nuts.
Yeah, exactly. And what he gets up to, but he's, you know, kind of, as I said, he's the X factor, I suppose, I look at it, you know, and someone you couldn't even analyze, you know, coming into a game, and his strength, he found from somewhere, wriggling out two, three players tackling him, even me running on the field seeing that. And look, he's a special player, but I think it's at the end of the day, it's how he fits into that national side and going forward. And I think those decisions need to be kind of made by the coach and the coaching staff leading up to that. But there's always someone that's gonna miss out. And again, there's probably on the South African side a few guys that have as well missed out on there. But as I said, all you can do as a player is put your hand up, I suppose, put yourself in that position to be selected, force the selector's hand, and if you go, you ready to play, you know, and if you're not, then you obviously put your head down wherever you've decided to go and give it your best shot.
I know this weekend you'll obviously be shouting for both teams in green, and I'd love your view on, especially with your expertise, the Irish front row. What have you made of Keane Healy, Rory Best and Tadhg Furlong?
Yeah, of course. For me, it's a great front row, I suppose. I think it's our best front row at this stage, I suppose, and the competition is massive up front at the moment. Taking a step back there, I suppose, for me, David Kilcoyne have added massive when he's come off the bench, and I suppose in one sense you need some continuity up front there. John Ryan, for me, has also added when he's come off the bench and got opportunity. But for me, it's about combinations, you know, up front. Look, at times they've been under pressure. We've seen a Japanese game. We've seen it in a few other games. They've been under pressure there. But again, this team, it seems, especially that front row, when they played against, I think that front row also played against All Blacks last time, you know, they rose up to the occasion. And also it's about the teams they play against. The All Blacks scrum quite similar to the Ireland setup, you know, they've got a kind of similar setup, and so they do rise up to that. But again, it's about combinations and continuity there. I'm not saying that the guys can't add to it, but I think it's probably our best combination at this stage for the guys playing together and going forward. But I can't wait to see Kilcoyne, David and these guys coming off the bench, you know, and adding to that.
Well, you spoke about Kilcoyne's impact from the bench. Porter is preferred over John Ryan, and he's able to play both tight and loose. Can you explain to people listening how difficult that is to do?
Yeah, very difficult. I think especially at this level, you know, you kind of, as a prop, you come through the age groups, and basically at some stage when you enter the 20s, early 20s, you need to make a decision really from a playing perspective. If you're going to be playing loosehead and tighthead, it's completely different roles. The one tighthead position, obviously scrumming on two shoulders, and you're literally wedged in between the loosehead and the hooker's head. So you've got no problem with your angle coming in. You kind of nice and straight, where at the loosehead, you really need to work hard on the left side of your body and work hard to stay straight and obviously get your opposition number three under pressure. So completely different, and someone to be able to do that at that level is quite exceptional, you know, to kind of play at that level. I suppose, yeah, I would like to have seen more of John Ryan. I'm not a massive fan of. I'm not a massive fan of making a player one and a three. Mm-hmm. I think it's great for a coach. I think it's great for a team to have that. But I suppose from a specialist perspective, and if I think from a player's perspective, a player wants to specialise, I think he can go just that much further and maybe a little bit sooner. Because I think coaches like to have those options, you know, at hand. You know, covering one and three if they need them.
Can you explain? Because everyone listening, you know, they always look and they think Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, they're the heartbeat of the teams. But you know when you're in it, how important a tight head is. How important is Tadhg Furlong to this team?
Yeah, he's definitely, he's literally the spine of the scrum, really. I say everything really formulates through that. I mean, at times you could probably see that a tight head is position is under so much tension, the loose head and the hooker might be coming up on his side, and he just keeps his spine in line, and basically he could probably hold up a steady scrum just as that angle. But on the other side, it's not going to happen. If the tight head takes strain on his side, everything is going to go, you know. So it's kind of like pulling that pin kind of thing. So look, everything's driven through him. It's a real specialized position, takes time, and hence the fact that, you know, Tadhg Furlong is such a youngish tight head, so the potential is just massive where he's going to go. And just that's where you kind of learn your trade, I suppose, being in those positions and being on this platform, being in live situations, and, you know, he's just going to grow.
It must be nice for you, BJ, to be sitting down and watching the matches and seeing CJ Stander playing for Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose CJ is a good mate of mine. You know, I'm happy for him playing such good rugby. I suppose he's, you know, I see it from a different perspective, not from as much as a supporter's perspective. You know, we have different chats. You know, he's been in Ireland now a long time, and he's really that stalwart at eight. You know, as we've seen how many minutes he's actually played in the World Cup so far. So I think he's quite irreplaceable there for me, massive part of that side, and yeah, he's been part of that now for the last, I suppose, I think last 12 months or just starting on that, and being part of the great win over the All Blacks and building up to that and building to a World Cup. Massive drive, massive motivation, such a great team guy, and, you know, he wears his heart on the sleeve, you know, whatever he does, and he makes that break, I suppose, from that tension and kind of nerves that build up to the big games. He's that kind of, even though he's still quite young, I suppose, he comes out and he shows that experience side of himself.
And just, BJ, like in the run-up to the Rugby World Cup, there was a lot of focus on the South African team after they posted that picture of themselves with no shirts on, and it wasn't in a positive light. There was questions over potentially not that team, but that there might be some sort of a doping culture in South Africa. What were your thoughts about the negativity that surrounded the run-up to the World Cup?
Well, I thought that picture was basically just showing how good Arlette Walters was.
Arlette Walters is the fitness strength and conditioning program. But I must be honest, I felt like dropping him a message saying, I followed your program for 3 years and I never got into that shape. So
yeah, look, I think it was, yeah, I suppose, you know, the guys are gymming in Japan and, you know, kind of having a group picture after a session, whatever they might be doing. Some of the guys are sumo wrestling. But look, it's a tough one, you know. It's very unfortunate what happened there. They're dealing it with a separate manner. WADA, World Association of Drugs, they're dealing with it in the manner it should be. You know, it does obviously send a certain negative vibe through, of course. But, you know, I think they would have been one part protected, the side, going into the World Cup from that. The guys would have, you know, had to make that break there and really just concentrate on what they've been building on. Again, this World Cup is a 3.5 year cycle building up to this tournament, you know, for some teams that, you know, so they build up to this and definitely don't want to let that go at the end from a negative perspective. But we've even seen in the media back in South Africa now, and keeping my ear to the ground there, some people's opinions about racial tension, certain things that have been within the group again, that is out there with Eben Etzebeth. And again, one part just trying to, you know, instigate, and but on the other side, things need to be taken down the right protocols, you know.
And just like yourself growing up in South Africa, like, I know there was focus on it, and that especially in schoolboys, 10% of schoolboy rugby players in South Africa between 15 and 18 admitted to taking some form of illegal substance. When you were growing up, did you ever see anything that made you feel uncomfortable?
No. Look, for me, it was basically, you know, I was also, you know, for me, it was basically mostly having fun, really playing, I suppose, in my school days, you know. School rugby was all about building that camaraderie, as they say, with your fellow pupils, fellow teammates, and, you know, building through that and going to the gym to get big and doing the work in the gym, going through and kind of, I suppose, drinking as much milk as you can in those days, getting your protein from that. Because, again, we didn't have the supplements, you know. I think coming up around 96, 97, when I was coming to the end of my school career, it was basically creatine was just introduced, and we were like, oh, what is this new thing on the market? So look, I don't know so much about kind of what's been said, and obviously what's out there, and obviously statistics are out there, and that evidently probably shows, and I suppose it's always going to, in one part, be exposed. I suppose it needs to be dealt with, of course, you know, stringently. But I think, as again, the protocols are out there to deal with that. But I think as we see in other sports as well, and we've seen the massive people being exposed in cycling and athletics and these things, you know, and especially a team like in Russia, more so to light. And I think these have also been happening because, again, drugs testing has become so more advanced, and they keep testing and samples, you know, as when you get tested, you sign a form for basically if they can keep your test, I suppose, to test down the line. So these things are happening, and I suppose that's why more things are coming to the fore, you know.
We saw it as well with Munster, though, BJ, because we saw Grobler coming over and ultimately not staying because he just wasn't accepted because of his past. Did you think that he was treated fairly?
Yeah, I think what happened with Gebrant was obviously later on. I think he'd been there for a year. Am I right? And then this came up. Yeah, I suppose people probably knew for sure when he was contracted that this occurred. I think this happened closer to the time where you think he was injured or something, and I'm not too sure if it was something put in the media and the guys jumped on this. And then at the end of the day, I think his contract wasn't renewed. It was coming up to renewal, and I think that was all the hype about that. But, you know, Gebrant obviously, you know, tested positive, and he was banned for 2 years. And obviously his movement overseas was to play for Munster. And that happened obviously after a year or year and a half, whatever, he got injured. And that's where it happened. But I suppose in one part, the protocols were there, and fair decision. Obviously the decision was made by the RFU not to contract him. Of course, that's their decision. But I think the one part would be a little bit of the other side would be the guy that the people, I suppose, Limerick's a small place, Munster's a small place, and Ireland as well, you know, you know, were supporting him on the field and off the field. And I think one part he probably left with his head down a little bit, you know, from a human perspective. You know, he's gone over to England now. I think he's playing in there. I'm not too sure following up to that. And again, I wasn't really a fan of the story. I was actually in France at that stage, but I did hear bits and pieces of it. But I would say that one part probably wasn't dealt with the way it should have been.
Donica, do you think that he was, first of all, treated fairly within Munster, and secondly, that there should be a way back for people who have failed drugs tests within rugby, within Irish rugby, really?
It's tough. It really is a hard one. I know for myself personally, I don't think he should have been signed. I thought that was a bad call. But I did feel that when he was in, and like BJ said, he was halfway through his season. The lads had become friendly with him. They'd become tight with him. They believed he served his 2 years. And they were willing to not only play with him, but put their bodies on the line with the guy. And they knew, and they've spoken to him about how remorseful he was. But I think for me, it became nearly another issue of a young man that was away from his family, away from his support network. And I think that's why Munster pulled around him. And I'm actually quite proud that Munster pulled around him in that moment. He had played for Racing at that point. I think all anyone that cheats, and particularly when it comes to signing for Irish provinces, I don't think that should happen. I think that was the greater error. But I was disappointed that midway through it, as opposed to, like, if there was this furore about it earlier on, I don't think he would have signed. But he built bonds with those players, and then it was very difficult afterwards.
Yeah, I think for sure, to retract what Don is there, I think it should have been dealt with when the option came up to sign him, you know. And then I suppose it didn't, and this took place later, and then it became a little bit grey, you know, and the media caught on to that, the pressure from the media.
I know that you're living in Limerick now and your family there, so, like, what jerseys will they be wearing on Saturday for the day?
Yeah, cheapest, to be honest. I think my boy has actually got a Springbok jersey, but the rest have got Irish. So, look, there'll be a combination for sure, you know. They definitely got the country accent, so it's difficult to get past that.
I'm surprised it's not a Limerick hurling jersey.
Yeah, no, they've also got that. Don't worry about that. But, yeah, so I think it would be an interesting one now if we had this Ireland-South Africa in the quarterfinal. But, yeah, I think we'll be obviously wearing both. And just really, and look, I mean, in perspective, it's great to see, it'll be great to see Ireland push past New Zealand, and I still have belief that can happen for sure. I think everyone has that, and that's all you can really ask for, you know, and they would surely have that. So and South Africa, I think, is obviously that little easier for me. But yeah, it'll be great to see them both push through.
What, another guy I know you're close with, he used to drive you crazy, but is Dave Kilcoyne. And I know he leans heavily on you for advice. Do you keep in touch? Will he chat to you about what he should do this weekend against the All Blacks?
Yeah, I think Dave, me and Dave got on so well. You know, we obviously were right against there, scrummaging against each other for, you know, at Munster, which is unique, and which is always interesting, you know, being up there. And David, from a youngster, always showed this aggressive side of himself, but also a very calm head, you know, and also showing that humorous side of him. And I'm just so happy for him, really, where he's come. He's really so determined and motivated, and he's basically, you know, kind of really put himself in this position. I think if you look at Dave 2 years ago, where he came now, he's just completely, you know, ignited. You know, and as I said, I think he could start for Ireland, really, and there'd be no difference, really. And he would probably add that little bit of X factor that he brings on the carrying side of things. And look, I do chat to him and stuff like that, but I think Dave is well aware what he needs to do and going forward with. But we would have a odd coffee now and then, and speak about and reminisce about the front row stories, I suppose.
I always got a kick out of that. All he ever wanted was for you to wash him. Normal rugby players would be happy with, like, fairy liquid in the shower. BJ had 3 different bottles and he gave himself an incredible wash in the shower. Opposed to Dave Kilcoyne, who was normally just running, throwing a t-shirt on and running up for food. But he used to always say that, BJ, I'd love BJ Botha to give me a scrub.
Well, hold on. Well groomed, as we call it, I suppose. But yeah.
And just, BJ, before we let you go, like, obviously here we're massively interested in Ireland versus New Zealand. Can you give us a prediction?
Yeah, I suppose the story before the prediction, my thinking is this, is that I think if we were going into this game, you know, having built some momentum through our results, but also through our play and management, from playing and managing the players through the pool stages, we put ourselves under some pressure and are losing to Japan, getting over Scotland, obviously. But it's been a hard road, I felt, and I think we might pay for that in the last 20 minutes of the game. You know, we see past results going on. Something I mentioned to someone the other day, back in 2007 when France beat New Zealand, they made, I think Terry Dizitoy made something like in the 30s. tackles, you know, and I feel that's the effort it's going to take. But my question with that, can we do that with what we've played? You know, we've spoke about CJ earlier, he's played in every single game, the minutes the guys have played. But look, it's the strongest team they could ever select really at this time and place, and I think anything can happen. So let's hope, and I'll be shouting from this side for sure, but there's no doubt that it's going to be a massive challenge.
You know what I love in that? The amount of times you said we. BJ, thanks so much.
Lovely.
Thanks, BJ.
Thanks, guys. All the best there. Cheers, guys.